This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
My name's Nicole and I'm from Brisbane in Australia. I was sick and tired of feeling sick and tired and had just begun yet another attempt at a non-drinking stint when I discovered the Over the Influence podcasts. The timing couldn't have been better. I binge listened to them all, joined the OTI community and have never looked back. If, like me, you've tried and tried to put down the plonk, but even after some success, keep finding yourself pulled back into the mire, join us in the OTI community, where we all share our stories of what works and what doesn't and where we're currently at. Everyone's just so full of understanding and inspiration. In a few weeks, I'll reach a whole year without a single drop, and I can't thank the OTI community enough. You guys rock and make all the difference in the booze-free world.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. It's fantastic to have you listening wherever you may be on your alcohol-free journey. You might be sober, you might be sober curious, you might be, I don't know, still drinking. We're not bothered, but thank you for listening. And I reckon today's episode is going to be an absolute belter. If you are tuning in for the very first time, a quick introduction or reintroduction, I'll let you know who we are. My name is Sharon Hartley, based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. Excuse the voice, by the way, I'm a little bit croaky. 5.5 years alcohol free. It was only ever meant to be a break because I've, you know, shared with you many, many times, I thought it would be dull, boring crap. And what is the point of living life without alcohol? It turns out there's a million and one reasons, and I think we're going to get into a lot of those today with our guest. It's Ace. My only regret is maybe not doing it a bit sooner than I did at the age of 44. I do not do this on my own. Hello, co-host Ben.
Hello, I'm Ben. I'm 35, live in Liverpool, stepdad to Alfie and Millie, dad to Leo, husband to Jem, and I am going to be 4 years alcohol-free in the summer. I suppose kind of I was a binge drinker. I didn't have an off switch. And actually, since giving up booze, I've channeled that same energy, that same kind of dog with a bone energy that I put into my drinking, into more positive places. And I think it can be a good thing, that kind of all or nothing character trait, as long as you're putting it to something good. I could go on about that forever, so I won't. Because actually what I want to pick up on is, why are you more northern when you're ill, Shaz?
I do sound proper northern, don't I? Somebody told me today, I said, like, Phyllis off Coronation Street.
Because, I mean, you are northern. You're proudly northern.
I am.
But more northern when you're ill. And it's just, that's just weird, and I can't quite work out why.
Yeah, no, I don't know. Well, you're going to have to deal with it because you've got this for the best part of an hour now. It's not going to get any better. But maybe we won't do as much talking and we can leave it all to the guest today. Dead excited about this. And I'll tell you why. He's dead sober. He's got a proper good story to share. And I don't know how it happened. It must have been the algorithms through his Instagram in my direction a few weeks ago. And I watched it and I messaged you, Ben, and I said, this fella is right up our street. You're going to really, really love it. So it gives us great pleasure today to welcome Gary Mayers from the South Coast, Worthing, to Over the Influence. Gary, how the hell are you? Thank you.
I'm very well, thanks. I just thought I'd tell you as well that I actually met Phyllis from Coronation Street when I was about 8.
You did not?
I did. I met her at the Midland Hotel after a WWF wrestling event.
You know what? That is the stuff of truth. She was well famous back then.
Jill Summers, I think her name is.
Yeah, and she was friends with Percy Sugden, wasn't she? Percy! For context, it's a soap opera based in the north of England called Coronation Street. If you're yes. wondering what the hell we're on about, yeah. if you're listening overseas,
and North American just audience Google it. Have got no idea. Absolutely none.
Gary, okay, should we start with the milestone that you have literally just hit? Let's start there, and I think we'll work our way backwards.
Okay, great. Yeah, a week ago today, I hit 10 years sober.
Amazing.
Which was
amazing.
Yeah, absolutely amazing. And it's been, it feels like a lifetime ago that it all happened, but it also feels like 2 minutes ago. So yeah, a lot of reflecting. And to be honest, I don't think I'd have thought too much about it if I hadn't had my Instagram page, which started about 10 weeks ago. And I've had a whole lot of love about the 10 years. And yeah, I had a nice day. Well, I was at work all day, but I didn't take it too seriously. I just kind of got on with my business. But that's how I've approached sobriety, really.
10 years. 10 years is for not an entire decade, Gary, without a sniff. It's mad.
Well, I've had alcohol in my mouth 3 times, but that's another story, but all accidentally.
Right.
One was a tiramisu, which I was only about 8 months sober, and it actually rocked my world because I hadn't, obviously, no intention of having that flavour, taste, sensation. And I was at my mum's house for Christmas. I was back from Spain, and I fancied something sweet, which is common in my life, pre-drinking as well. When I was a kid, I loved all that stuff. So the sugar thing was, you know, it was just a continuation throughout my whole life. And I went to get some tiramisu, took a massive spoonful, and boom, the amaretto hit me like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
And yeah, it rocked me mentally. I was ended up crying in my mum's kitchen. But other than that, sober as a judge.
Brilliant. Absolutely amazing. Right, let's rewind. I think we've got a lot to talk about, haven't we? Where do you want to start in terms of sharing where you were to where you are today?
Do you know what? I think the biggest compliment I can pay myself is I still feel like the same person. But I was an absolute wreck 10 years ago. My life had fallen off a cliff and alcohol was me. I was alcohol. I wasn't like a weekend binge drinker. Well, I was, but I was everything in between as well. So my whole persona and being revolved around being a piss artist. You know, that's how I was known amongst my friend group. It's how anyone would have perceived me if they'd met me on a night out, that Christ, this guy's, you know, full all in. And yeah, it was just my life. From the age of 18, I would say, I was an early starter. I knew I had a problem when I was young. And I mean, by the time I'd left uni, I was full blown. I was drinking like a 50-year-old, to be honest. So yeah, something had to give, and it gave 10 years ago.
Go on then. In terms of kind of deciding to make that change, was it something that was a long build up? Or was it like, had it been in your consciousness for a while, or was it right one day, bang, this has got to stop immediately?
Well, no, I mean, I was 33 when I quit, and even at university, I was trying to work out how to get sober. So I'll go back way back to my teens. I just remember being at a house party one day with all my mates. I was about 16 and I was drinking Carling Premier, if you remember that.
Like, oof.
Yeah. The frothy kind of ale-y version of Carling. But I just remember looking around at everyone thinking, they don't like this like I do. I'm in trouble here. And I knew straight away. I remember telling my mate one night at a party that I was concerned about how much I was drinking. I was probably about 17. So those two incidents like really stick in my head. And when I got to uni, no chance. I was 19. They kept giving me money every 3 months, you know. And I was away from home. And I just absolutely smashed it every single day for 4 years and wasted the whole opportunity. It was just a blur, really. Recreational drugs, depression, financial, you know, misery kicking in. You know, I was still a teenager. And that just dictated my whole 20s. When I left uni, I didn't have a plan. I didn't have a CV written. I was a mess, really. And my career suffered. I'd not go in on a Monday. Then I'd have the Tuesday convincer. Then I'd end up taking the whole week off because I just couldn't face it. And I'd just be drinking all week. And I mean, from 18 to 33, just pretty much, unless I was asleep or in an office, I had a drink in my hand, really. And I have to be honest, I fucking loved it, a lot of it. I was obsessed. And I loved drinking, but I hated everything that went with it. I hated the way that I behaved at 3 o'clock in the morning and all the scrapes and stupid, you know, positions I got myself into. And it just started to like torture me, really. And the only way I could like alleviate that pain, obviously, was just by getting pissed again.
And then it all starts again, doesn't it?
Yeah, just hideous, really. And then I had a particularly bad weekend because I moved to Spain when I was 31. I kind of ran away from England with my partner. And I had a particularly bad weekend, which I've just done a 5-day recount on Instagram of the last 5 days of drinking, because it's quite a vivid memory, even though I was pissed out with face the most of it. But I kind of knew that if I carried on at that time of my life, I was going to be dead or, you know, in the gutter. So I had this hideous weekend. I was living in Seville and I went to Granada in the south of Spain, just with my mates for the weekend. And on the first night, I just annoyed everyone beyond, you know, beyond belief. And on the Monday, I ended up in the hills of Granada without a penny to my name, a phone with like 4% battery. I'd been on drugs all weekend, been drinking all weekend. My mates that I'd gone with, who were my flatmates, had abandoned me, didn't want to know me. And I was just lost. And then my flip-flop broke. So I just thought, do you know what? now or never, really. And I went to AA on the Saturday and I never looked back, really.
Is that where it started for you, at AA?
Yeah. So my last drink was on a Monday, and on the Tuesday, I took the train back to my flat on the Monday night, and I thought, right, tomorrow I'm going to give it a go. Like, seriously give it a go. Because I've been trying to quit on a Monday morning. I was a morning drinker as well, which is a big problem. But I often would get home from work and think, right, I'm not going to go to the office. I'm not going to go to the office or the pub. And I just, it was a relentless cycle like that for, you know, a decade. And if I drank on a Monday, I drank until Monday, really. I'd kind of been cut out of all my friends' lives because of the way I was behaving. My parents were obviously in England. I'd been living in Spain for a couple of years and I didn't really have anyone. I'd broken up with my girlfriend the previous year, who I now have a baby with and live with. You know, my drinking had like ruined that as well, but we managed to get together back together again during COVID. And I actually rang her and said, look, I'm done. Like, I can't exist like this anymore. And I rang AA the next morning. I actually went for a coffee. I woke up and I thought, right, I'm going to go for a coffee and I'm not going to have a drink, because I was going into this bar at 7 every morning around that time and starting to drink. So I'm going to go and have a coffee, and I had a Fanta. And I was shocked about how expensive sobriety would be, because I was like, well, that's about €4 for that. You know, it's €1 for a beer. And then I realized I don't drink, you know, 27 coffees in a day. So, yeah, and I rang the AA, and I spoke to this old Floridian guy, American dude, and he said, oh, sorry, son, you've missed the meeting for today, but there's one on Saturday. And I was living in Seville, and I found this English-speaking one on the street parallel to mine. So I think it was written. And yeah. I went on the Saturday morning. But yeah, Tuesday to Friday was just, I was just a gibbering wreck. I was a mess. I should have gone to hospital, really, I think, or detox of some description. Yeah. But, 'cause I was just drinking, you know, every minute of the day for months and months and months. And it was just unsustainable, really.
That must have been a huge leap. Never mind the state your body would have been in physically. But, you know, when we first started chatting, you said that you were alcohol. It was you. It defined it. You loved it. And then you reached the point where actually, you know, it's all shits and giggles, isn't it? Until it's absolutely not. What was it like making that really sudden leap, I suppose, to you know, having your personality defined by being the big crazy pisshead, to going, I'm going to pick up the phone and ring AA?
Do you know what? I'm deep down, I'm a big softie, really. I'm really tight with my mum. I'm an only child, and I'm an emotional, honest, open heart and sleeve guy. So walking into AA it was weird. Of course it was. You know, I thought I should have gone 10 years ago. But when I walked in, it was just like this cathartic release. And I walked in, and because I was born in Scotland, my parents are Scottish. And when I walked in, it was just full of Scots. Unbelievable. There was about 6 or 7 Scots and an Icelandic priest. And he was addicted to everything, bless him. And yeah, I just felt like I was with my people, because I'd never really spoken to anyone about it. Everyone knew, but it was like that week, it was kind of acceptance. So, and I think a lot of people talk about that with sobriety, like when you accept it and just kind of lean into it, you are relieved of the pressure. And that's what I did. I had my job to keep me sane, really. I was a teacher. I was teaching for a university, and I was able to have that kind of mad release, because when you teach English when you teach any language as a foreign language, it has to be dynamic, it has to be creative, it has to be, you know, all action. And that's the type of person I am. So I was able to have that release through work, and it was like 60 hours a week I was working. And I was just able to take my mind off it. But I just decided that I was just going to cut everything out, cut everyone out, cut, you know, going to bars. Just, I lived like a monk for, I don't know, 2 years, really. So yeah, I just went on this kind of 2-year redefining mission, and quite quickly I hit the pink cloud, I think. I was like, oh, what's this? This is mega. I'm going to write a book. I'm going to make a movie about my life. So yeah, no, the first 6 months was hell, really. And then I got a transfer to Tenerife. And when I got to Tenerife, I started like messing around with meditation and getting a bit more spiritual, and just after work, go straight home and just put YouTube on, and YouTube and philosophy and all that kind of stuff got me really on a level. And then I was able to plan the rest of my life. But yeah, it was fucking horrible, really.
Mm. Gary, I want to ask you more about your redefining mission soon, because I think it's really interesting, especially when someone says that, you know, drinking alcohol, it was their identity, it was their persona. I'm always interested to ask, when you removed it, you know, how did you decide who you were going to be? You know, did it appear or did you craft it? We'll come back to that because I've got another question first, which is about what you said, being 17 years old and looking around that house party and going, I'm doing this differently to all of you. Have you thought about why that might be the case? And the reason I ask it is because we've been doing this now for, is it 4 years, Chaz, nearly, the podcast?
Podding for 4 years, yes.
Hundreds
more
of hours of conversation. And I think, you know, as we've got into it more and we've spoken to more people, it feels like we've kind of really defined what we want Over the Influence to be now. And actually for us, it's all about, you know, you don't need to have that rock bottom. And, you know, a rock bottom as defined by society is one thing. You can have an internal, emotional rock bottom within yourself that no one else knows about. But you don't have to get to that rock bottom point to decide to change. And the kind of the power of early intervention, I suppose, how wonderful would it be if more people listened to that little voice that said, this isn't going the right way, mate. You know, and that's why it's really interesting for me to ask, because I look back and I was a weekend binge drinker, mainly because in my 20s, I did a job that started at 5 o'clock in the morning and I couldn't go out and be there. And I'm sure if I didn't have that lifestyle, I probably would have drunk in the week as well. I think for me, I noticed my drinking change. If I'm going to get really deep and psychological about it without boring you, Gary, I think it's because I was really good at drinking and I noticed that early. Whereas I was in and out of the rugby team, I wasn't the first name on the team sheet. I was always in the school play, but I was never quite the lead role. You know, but drinking, yeah, I could drink. What was it for you that made you go, right, I'm different. My drinking is different to everyone else in this room, in this house party?
It's a great question. And I resonate with what you say. I was brilliant at drinking. I had a high constitution for it. I loved the taste of it. I had 3 pints to 7 pints where I was electrifying company, I think. My friends, a lot of my mates may disagree. But after about 8, I was a knobhead. I tell you what, so when I'm a massive football fan and I'm a massive indie rock and roll fan, and I grew up 12 miles from Manchester, I'm a United fan and I love Oasis. And it sounds childish, but I was desperate to be involved in that kind of lifestyle where it involved around drinking, not hooliganism, but just the whole kind of Oasis vibe and energy, you know. And I just felt like a different person when I had a drink inside me. And I felt like I was living up to that image that I wanted to have. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I was in pubs early. United were winning everything. I was going to watch the football when I was 12, 13 in the pubs. And it was just so glamorous and all the plumes of smoke. And I just got intoxicated by it. And I was really young, and I couldn't wait to be allowed to go to the park on a Friday night so I could drink 2020 and cider. I was gagging for it. And the minute it finished, and I wake up feeling like crap on a Saturday, I was desperate for the next week. So I don't know if I had like a chemical disposition to be an alcoholic. I think so. I also think in my recent life, I'm pretty sure I've got ADHD. And I know that's a lot of people think, okay, everyone's got ADHD now. But I look at the patterns of my behavior. I've not just been addicted to alcohol, been addicted to a plethora of things and, you know, gambling, sex, I would say, you know, a whole host of stuff. And a lot of my behaviors are akin to ADHD. So I would say it was setting, environment, maybe an internal disposition and just an absolute love of it. And it just released me. It just made me become the character that I wanted to be, like the front man of a band, you know. It quickly got its grip in me. So I would cite those three reasons. Retrospectively now, ADHD, I think, is a big one. Because I don't think I've just got ADHD. I think I've got it with bells on, you know, and I've not bothered my ass to go to the doctor about it or anything like that. You know, I've got other things to get on with, like my Instagram page and my job and my kids, you know. So, like, I've not got the time, but... yeah, I was mad for it, as they say.
What was the more powerful motivator? If we're taking that front man of the band analogy, is it that the front man of the band would have a can in his hand while he was on stage? Or is it that having a beer made you feel like you could be the front? Like, was it more like, it's a really difficult question. And if you don't want to talk about it and we want to move on, that's absolutely fine.
No, I'll talk about anything, me.
Was it setting? Was it kind of looking up to role models who would, you know, be on stage, arching their back, microphone with cigarette in one hand, beer in the other, quite,
yeah, yeah.
You know, was it the symbol, or was it the feeling that kind of, you know, we talk about, makes you feel like a superhero when you first start drinking, especially, and then you go often leads you to go and do daft and stupid and dangerous things. But do you get where I'm coming from?
Yeah, definitely. I felt indestructible when I'd had enough booze inside me. You know, I'm an only child, and I spent a lot of my teens just, you know, chilling at home on my own, thinking, being thoughtful and, you know, pensive. I wear my emotions heavily, and I just got that release at the weekend, and it just made me feel 20 foot tall every weekend. I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was captivating. I thought it was gregarious. Everything. I just was convinced I was, God, it's a hard question. It's a long time ago as well, you know, I'm 43.
Yeah.
But I'd definitely say,
you don't look it, Gary.
Thank you very much. Well, it's probably because I haven't drank 10 years.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, honestly.
Yeah, yeah, it's worked wonders, hasn't it?
I look back at some pictures of myself, and it's shameful, really. And I've used a lot of them on Instagram just to make the point, you know, of where I was at and how far I've come. And also just obviously the whole Instagram social media thing that I've created is to give people hope and to make them believe that they, no matter how shit it is, that they can get out of it. Because I would say mine was quite an extreme case. Talk about rock bottom. I don't feel like I hit a rock bottom. Everyone's got their own definition of it, but is rock bottom living on the street begging, or is it that your life's in tatters, but you still go to work, but privately you've hit a rock bottom? I don't know. I think rock bottom can be insulting to those that have really hit it, you know?
It's a difficult one. I think there's a societal rock bottom, which is park bench, lost everything. No one wants to know you, you know. But I also think there can absolutely be an emotional rock bottom where no one can know at all. But you wake up and you go, God, I fucking hate myself. You know, that mm-hmm. if that's, that can be just as, if not more powerful than the, I don't know. It's a tricky one. I'm sorry to kind of keep going on, but I think for us, the more we get into this, I'm just really interested in why this happens. You know, why is it that alcohol really does get its grip into some people early? You know, like you're saying that you were thinking at 17, you were like, this isn't great. You know, Shaz, you always talk about.
Yeah, but at the same time, he's thinking, it's glamorous. It makes me feel 20 foot tall. I want to look like them. Makes me feel like a rock star. You know that it's shit, and you know how it makes you feel, yet you were still sort of seeking that.
Yeah, because the high was so good that it was worth the low at that time. I could live with the low. I could live with the shame for a day, because when I was 17, I wasn't able to drink every day. It just didn't fit in with my, you know, my education and living at home. It was just impossible. But when I got to uni, I was just let loose. And that's when it really started to affect me mentally, like deeply. And the only escape was the drink, obviously, but it was the 90s, wasn't it? It was acceptable. It was even for girls, you know, the Zoe Ball, Sarah Cox, Ladette vibe, you know, rocking up to work completely with a bottle of Jack Daniels and cowboy boots. It was cool as, you know, and I just thought I was cool. And turns out I was a dick.
Listen, we've been there and done that, Gary. You're not on your own. And there'll be people watching this call now from our community. There are people listening to this that'll be absolutely nodding along. One thing I want to ask you about is on the flip side of this character that you wanted to be, when you remove the alcohol, it's stripped back, isn't it? This is it. This is me. What has it been like that, and excuse, you know, it sounds a little bit wanky, this whole journey of discovery as to who you are compared to who you wanted to be during the height of your drinking?
It angers me that I actually thought I wanted to be that person so many years ago. It pisses me off, because that's not real life. When you're chemically imbalanced, that ain't real life. So the journey of discovery was basically what normal people do in their 20s, I think. my sobriety journey is akin to my friends who went to uni, left uni, moved to London, got a good job, sorted all their life out and thought, oh, on a Wednesday, I'm going to go to a museum and expand my mind, you know, and broaden my horizons. And that's just the stuff that I did a lot later. You know, I had a lot of catching up to do because I had no time to do any self-discovery, any introspective thought whatsoever for the entire part of my 20s because I was pissed for the whole lot of it. So I can't answer that question really because I don't know what it's like to not be a drunk when you're young. But what I do know is I'm actually now, when I look back, glad it happened to me because I had an opportunity at 33 to totally reevaluate my life, like top to bottom. And I don't know, that's not a common thing. You know, a lot of people just end up sliding into their life and maybe they get to 50 and think, how did I get here? But I made very conscious decisions that I was never going to go back there, that I was never going to behave this way. I was never going to, you know, undervalue myself. I was going to throw everything into my career to try and fulfill my potential. You know, got spiritual. I would never have done that ordinarily, ever. You know, don't believe in God. You know, still don't. But, you know, that wasn't part of it for me. And that's why I left AA, to be honest. But because I misconstrued higher power with God because I got taken to a church after one meeting by my sponsor. And I thought, no, I'm all right, mate. So, yeah, the self-discovery journey in my 30s was a more nuts and bolts version of what I think most people do when they're younger. A lot of catching up to do. But no regrets now, none.
It's fabulous to hear. Can you explain a bit more the I won't undervalue myself comment? What you meant by that?
I think I spent so much time hating myself and thinking it was pathetic that I actually believed it, that I was useless. Because I thought, well, why can't I just get up and kick the booze? I beat myself up for so long. And when I got sober, I just felt this surge of love for myself. I kind of let go of the, you know, Oasis wannabe dickhead. And I just let in this damaged, soft, new human being that I'd never met before. And I thought, I can't treat this one like I treated the last one. Because I did a reel about 3 or 4 weeks ago where I said, take yourself back to 8 years old. There is not a person in the world that would wish an alcohol problem on an 8 year old. But every alcoholic in the world was 8, you know, and it's just like tragically sad. And I just was determined that I was lucky. I was living in like Andalucía in Spain at the time. You know, I had, on paper, I had a great life. And once I got sober, I was able to make the most of that life. And I thought, I have to give myself a chance to live the best life possible. And I have. And it's been mega.
So if 20-something-year-old you, like if you met him now, mm-hmm. like what would you say to him?
I'd be really harsh on him.
Right.
Because it's me. I might not be like that with other people, but I'd grab him and I'd shake him and I'd tell him to stop being a dickhead. It's honestly what I'd say.
I bet he wouldn't listen.
Yeah, quite possibly. But no one ever told me. I remember one Sunday morning with a female friend of mine who's, you know, she's like a sister. I mean, I'm still friends with her. We were at her house in London. We both lived in London. And I said to her, I think it's the only time I've ever said it. I said, I'm an alcoholic. And I was 28, 29. She was like, well, yeah, obviously, Gary. But no one had ever gone, grabbed me and said, you're pathetic, sort it out. Because ultimately, the only person that's going to get you sober is yourself. You don't get sober for anyone else. You can't get sober for anyone else. I just don't believe that. My mum, who's like the most precious thing in my life, I hid a lot of it from her. But when she did show concern, I just like brush it off. I thought, well, I ain't going to stop. Not for like the dearest person in my life. So I don't know. I think I would have needed, but no one gave me that shake. No one ever, ever gave me that shake. And if I'd got the opportunity to do it to myself, I would do.
I know what Ben's going to ask you now. Go on, Ben. I just know where he's going.
Okay, carrot or stick, Gary, is what I want to ask. Because if someone had got you and shook you and gone, oi, you know, to use your words, stop being a dickhead, how would, like, thinking back to who you were, would that have worked, do you think? Would you have gone, oh, you know what? This random fellow with a nose piercing, he looks like me, but just only ever slightly older, has just grabbed me in the street and told me to stop being a dickhead, so I am going to be.
Yeah, I think I respond well to blunt truth, generally speaking. As a person, I will admit my missus might disagree, but like internally, I can admit my own faults. I know where my weaknesses are, and I think if someone had taken me aside and had a right good word with me, I'd have listened. But you know, it's speculation, isn't it? Who knows?
But it sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, that talking about that and thinking back to that time in your 20s, you were screaming out for somebody to notice that it was going in a really shitty direction.
Yeah, 100%. When I think back to the relationships I was in, you know, romantic relationships, often with girls that drank heavily, so it was very unlikely they were going to tell me. My mates were all, not all, but most of them were, you know, big, heavy weekend smashheads. My best mate, him and I were just absolute murder, you know, so it's very unlikely to come from him. I hid a lot of it from my mother and my dad. You know, my dad was my drinking buddy when I was in my teens. You know, we went to the pub together and watched United. And when I came back from uni, the thing I was most excited about was going to the pub with my dad. So, yeah, quite possibly I just needed someone to sit me down and have a good word. I'd often thought about going to AA when I lived in London, but I bottled it every single time. And maybe someone there could have been my mentor or sponsor. I don't know, but we'll never know now. But also, is it like it was a different time. Now I would have been able to seek out stuff on social media and been able to compare myself to others. Back then, you know, it wasn't like that. So
there was nothing.
Not a damn thing.
Nothing 10 years ago. I mean, even, you know, we've seen the change. We've been podcasting just over 4 years. We've got an online community that's been going 3 years this summer. You know, I think back to when I stopped drinking just over five years ago. There are a couple of things, and it's grown and grown and grown in that time. Rewind to when you were doing this at the, you know, 10 years ago, a decade ago, you'd have been flying solo, Gary, aside from the support you had from AA.
I mean, to be honest, I pretty much did it solo. Anyway, I went to this English speaking AA for about 4 months, but not like religiously every week. At the beginning, I did twice a week. And then I got taken to church, like I said, on this Saturday, and I thought, wow, this is not my bag. And do you know what I had a problem with? I knew I was an alcoholic, and I was happy to say it in AA, but I was not convinced that I needed to say it to myself for the rest of my life. I don't call myself an alcoholic now. I'm 10 years sober. You know, if I'd been 17 and a half, well, I was 17 and a half stone of pure, like, ale, but, you know, if I'd been morbidly obese then, and now I'm running marathons, I wouldn't go, uh-huh, I'm fat, you know. So yeah, I just I refused to be in a situation with AA where I always had to say, no matter how much progress I'd made, that I was an alcoholic. So I moved to Tenerife, then I moved to La Coruña, then I moved to Barcelona, then I moved to Santander, then I moved to Malaga, then I moved back to, you know, it was mental. I mean, I lived in 9 cities in Spain in eight years. So I did it all on my jack. And every time I moved, the only people that I knew were a small handful of teachers that I might have met a couple of years ago at another site. So, yeah, I mean, I did it proper solo. And I'm proud of that. And I think now I'm doing Sober and Sound on Instagram, telling people, you need support, you need a plan, you need guidance, you need love, but you also need your bollocks.
Balls of steel.
Or just drink until you're dead. You know, make your mind up. It's quite a harsh, you know, approach, but there's a tender side to me on my social media as well, but a lot of it's quite blunt because people really need to hear it and go, oh, Christ, yeah, you're probably right.
I think we do live in a very different world now. Like 10 years ago to when you gave up booze, but then let's go another 10 years before that when you're, you know, in your 20s, early 20s. I think we shouldn't forget that we lived in a society then where, yeah, you know, Oasis, cool. But there was also a very public, not cool side to society. Like, don't forget the magazines that did the Circle of Shames. Here's a gorgeous pop star and she's out on a night out and here's a circle of cellulite. Like, we lived in a culture where actually it was very pressured, I think, to be growing up in that environment where you were told this is what's cool, but also don't forget you'll be called out if you're not cool. Like, I don't think there was really a sentiment that you could just be yourself at that point. At least I didn't feel it where I was growing up. I felt like I had to conform to cool. Gary, talking to you now, you are cool. Like, you got a really cool top on, you got great hair, you've got a fabulous beard. You got a nose ring. You know, you can tell that there's a bit of Scottish that comes through. Then you got the Manc twang. Obviously, you're down south now, but you're just cool. And for someone to go on Instagram, I think that's what we didn't have, is that someone can go on Instagram and go, oh, Gary, he's cool. Oh, that's interesting what he's saying there. I think that now we didn't necessarily have those role models growing up. It was hedonistic. Cool was chaos. In a lot of ways, it was the rock and roll lifestyle, you know, and that did come with certain things. And I think do you think there is a difference? Now, do you feel like you are a cool role model
for damn people? Right, yeah. I really do. Yeah.
Of
course he does.
Damn right.
I've got about 17 Parkers. I'm cool as it gets. No, I mean, that's very kind of you to say, but I think the good side of what I got obsessed with when I was young, with the swagger and the kind of attitude and the self-belief, I've maintained, I've retained that part of my personality. So I can easily go on Instagram and blurt out exactly what I think about a very sensitive topic and not care what anyone says. That's a gift, really. I don't mean I'm special. I'm unfortunate that I just am not asked what people have got to say, you know, if it's negative. But yeah, I think I've got a message that resonates with a lot of people, and I think I am packaging it well, you know. I'm proud of what I'm putting out.
Why now?
Right, okay. So I had this very, like I said, a very transient life. I moved to Hungary. I was like all over the place, you know, and I never had this settled way of life. And then I came back during COVID, reconnected with my ex-partner that I moved to Spain with and had seen me at my worst and helped me get sober. And then when I got back during COVID, I had to get a new career. I had a kid for the first time at 40. And then we moved to the coast. So I've not had any like prolonged period of time where I've been settled in the last decade until recently. I felt like I did the dirty on a lot of people when I was drinking. And I felt like I had to pay society back for the lass that I insulted on Cardiff High Street and for the lad that I slapped at uni on the Saturday night and the person that I was rude to when I was hung. You know what I mean? I was an arsehole when I was drunk, you know, and I upset a lot of people. And I feel like I have to give something back. I also feel like I wasted so much of my life and opportunities to do good that now I have to find something that fits with my purpose and my meaning. You know, the words that never meant nothing to me when I was younger. It's like, what? Shut up, you know, you pussy. What are you on about? Just get a beer down you. I wasn't really like that, but the beer was making me, you know, be that kind of person. And I felt I just wanted to leave a legacy, and I wanted to do it on a grand scale. I want to do it on a grand scale. And the one thing in my life that I am an absolute expert on is how to get sober and stay sober. And I thought it'd be a beautiful thing to do. And honestly, the connections and the love that I've found online, it's just been unreal. Because, you know, you think about social media as being catty and narky and whatever. It's not been like that at all.
I don't think it is in the sober
space. No, maybe it is in other spaces, but it's not there.
Yeah, I think it's quite a unique place to be. You know, with our community, with our listeners, the other stuff that we all follow on social media, there's such a feeling of just of support and of wanting people to win. You know, you can do this. And like I said at the beginning of our episode, it was your Instagram account that just caught my eye and my ears. And I thought, Christ, he's honest. Oh my God. And he knows what he's talking about because he's been there and done that. So every credit.
Thank you. I thought I might have imposter syndrome, you know, when you've never done anything before. I have had one social media thing that was teaching high-level English learners slang English. So it was all very comical. It was kind of a similar vibe to what I'm doing. But it just didn't have, it didn't mean enough to me. Do you know what I mean? I was like, oh, what did you do for the last 20 years of your life? Oh, I just taught people from, you know, Madrid how to say, I'm off my head, mate. Yeah, I was like, this doesn't have enough, you know? I'd rather stop people getting off their head. And, you know, when I came into it, I really thought, oh, I might have imposter syndrome. Because, you know, you watch all these Instagram reels and they're so slick and they're so beautifully put together.
Oh, me and Ben are useless, by the way. We can't even do it.
Yeah, that's why we stick
to the learning. I'm no expert on that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just got a lot to say, really. And now I'm a father. I spend a lot of time at home. And so I have to say it somehow. But I'm never out, so got to do it in a phone.
I love that.
And actually, we've got a question in our chat box from Adam about that. It's one of our community members watching. How does it feel that your child will never have or will ever see you drink, Gary?
Oh, great. I'm already proud of it. She's 3 next month. And I honestly think that when she's old enough to get it, alcohol won't be as much of a thing as it was when I was that age. So I'm not sure what it'll mean to her, because if this AF lifestyle carries on like this, there'll be no one drinking in 20 years. So, yeah, no, but it means a huge amount to me. I don't want my kid to, I say my kid, that sounds awful, my daughter, my amazing daughter, to smell alcohol on me or see me behaving strangely. You know, it means everything to me that I'm putting myself in a position to live as long as I possibly can to see her. To see her grow up, because if I'd had her 10 years ago, I think I'd be dead, to be quite honest. I don't think I'd have made 40. Just the way I was drinking and what I was drinking. And also the scrapes I was getting into. It's a miracle a bus didn't hit me or one of those punches didn't put me in a coma, you know? Because I was an antagonistic drunk. Like, my self-loathing would come out at 1 a.m. and I'd just take it out on anyone and everyone. So, yeah, I'm incredibly proud that my daughter will never see me with a drink in my hands. And I don't drink those AF drinks. I'm not into that. I don't get it. I mean, I get it, but it's not for me.
I'll just quickly ask another question here. Camilla, who's one of our community members, she said, did you ever complete the 12 steps in AA?
No. So I went to AA. I found it very cleansing at the beginning. And I read the big book in about 3 days. And I got a lot out of that. A huge amount, and it made me realize I was an alcoholic, which was just what I needed at the time.
One final question from the chat box. This is from Davina. Do you still love Oasis?
apart from maybe Man United, there's nothing I love more in the world than Oasis.
obviously not taking into account your fabulous partner or daughter
here. Of course.
Apart from that, yeah.
People that I know and live with. Yeah, but yeah, no, I love them. Yeah, I love them. But, all that scene from that era, Stone Roses, The Smiths, you know, I'm obsessed with all of it. I actually listen to predominantly electro-pop by female Swedish artists nowadays. But,
that is absolutely bizarre that you say that, because that is whenever anyone asks me my favourite genre of music, I honestly say electro-pop with an Eastern European vocal is and I don't know why.
Like Leaky Lee and people like that, I love it. It's brilliant. But that's my vibe. I'm that kind of, I'm a overtly positive person, I'm very upbeat, and I just, music that lifts me and feeds my soul is my kind of style, you know. I've never bought a Radiohead album in my life.
Didn't have you down as a Radiohead.
No. Look at me. I've got I'm wearing. Not a chance.
Yeah, exactly. We've literally got about 2 minutes left. I've got a final question for you, and you won't have enough time to answer it. I know you won't. So see if you can do it briefly. How the hell would you summarise the life changes that you've experienced over the last decade. And, you know, for people listening to this, we need to remind you listening that you're still only, what, 43, Gary? Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Like you said, you changed the trajectory of your life at the age of 33. How the hell would you sum up the past decade?
It's been a dream. It's been sober hedonism. I was very lucky with my life, where I was at in my life. I did love my job. I loved where I was living. So I had a good platform to rebuild from. But yeah, sobriety is just, and you said, you don't want to sound wanky, but it's like a rebirth. To me, it's just, I've had, I feel like a child again. I don't now, you know, it's old hat now. I don't say that disparagingly, but oh, I mean, if anyone was listening and said, what's sobriety like? I'd say, it's like all the dreams you had as a kid coming true, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. I just love that sober hedonism. It's amazing. It's really has been a pleasure. We've so enjoyed it. It has flown by. You must give your Insta a plug, because we've referred to it a lot throughout this. Where can people find you, Gary, if they want some hard-hitting and honest sober content?
They can find me at Sober and Sound. Sober, the letter N, and then Sound, Sober and Sound. I'm on Instagram. I've just created a TikTok account. I will be on there, but it's, again, Sober and Sound. And my mate and I, Craig, are about to start a podcast. We've got the Instagram handle at The Sober Stretch. It will be very profane and frank, and yeah, it'll be a lot of stories that things we used to get up to. But he's sober as well, so yeah, it'll be wild, I think. So that's at The Sober Stretch.
Absolutely brilliant, Gary Mayers. Thank you so much.
If you need a guest for the podcast,
oh, absolutely, yes,
yeah.
Top of the list, definitely. Really, really appreciate you having me on. It's been a lot of fun. Thank you very much.